Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome. I'm Tracy McClure. Coming up on today's program, has the priesthood become irrelevant? We hear from one Vatican clergyman about the challenges and the joys of following in Christ's footsteps. And do you really know your priest? The anguish and devastation the sex abuse crisis has wrought on the countless untainted priests among us. With the Church in the grips of an international clerical sexual abuse crisis, one might wonder who would want to become a priest anytime soon. Pope Benedict himself was concerned about fidelity to priestly ministry and the very future of vocations when he inaugurated a year of prayer for priests back in June 2009. In his letter to priests announcing that decision, the Holy Father said the year is meant to deepen the commitment of all priests to interior renewal for the sake of a stronger and more incisive witness to the gospel in today's world.
The priesthood is the love of the heart of Jesus. This touching expression makes us reflect with heartfelt gratitude on the immense gift which priests represent, not only for the Church, but also for humanity itself. I think of all those priests who quietly present Christ's words and actions each day to the faithful and to the whole world, striving to be one with the Lord in their thoughts and their will, their sentiments and their style of life. How can I not pay tribute to their apostolic labors, their tireless and hidden service, their universal charity? How can I not praise the courageous fidelity of so many priests who, even amid difficulties and incomprehension, remain faithful to their vocation as friends of Christ, whom He has called by name, chosen, and sent?
I know priests who've dragged drug addicts out of the gutters and given them new life and hope. I know clergy who've taken kids out of Nairobi's massive and decaying garbage dumps and given them training to become computer programmers, social workers, or teachers. I know one Congolese priest here in Rome who so energized the tired faithful here that they've become virtual Congolese citizens, helping to build schools, purchase wells, and farming equipment for their less fortunate African brothers. I know priests who have died for their faith in India, in Africa, and the Middle East, simply because they dared to be priests and to live a life of true Christian witness. Father Bernie O'Connor, an official at the Pontifical Congregation for Eastern Churches and a regular contributor here on Vatican Radio, told me that many priests today are demoralized by a perception that their ministry has become irrelevant. The year for priests is meant to encourage young men to take up Christ's cross and become true witnesses of the Lord.
I think there's a number of influences in our society that are impacting upon the everyday Catholics as well, which suggests that the ordained priesthood is irrelevant, or at least certainly not as relevant as it once had been. And this is having an influence upon priests themselves. I think the Pope is aware that there's demoralization, and there's uncertainty and hesitancy and a certain insecurity. And I believe he wants to show by this year of the priests that there still is major relevancy, major necessity, and major vitality, which are characteristic of the vocation. He wants to endorse that and support it. For example, recently in Ars in October, there was a retreat, international retreat for priests. And the Holy Father wrote a letter having to do with his blessing upon the retreat. And one of the comments he made is that he says, the priest, more than ever in this time, should be a man of joy and hope. And that even when reflecting upon the patron of parish clergy, the cure of Ars, we're not thinking in terms of a morbid seeking of mortification, but rather of all that is vital and revitalizing, of the potential for evangelization and new life. That is the essence of priesthood.
Now, while seminaries in Africa and the Middle East are swelling, in the Western world, there's a real crisis in vocations in the priesthood. What do you tell young men who might be considering a vocation, or even those who've never even thought about one?
Well, I think what we have to distinguish here is, what do we mean by vocation to priesthood? In terms of crisis, I think the real crisis is not one of holy orders. The real crisis is a crisis of baptism. And people not taking seriously the responsibility to seek after God and to try to define their lives in terms of God's will for them. That is now considered archaic kind of reasoning and thinking. So, for example, I was reading Time magazine in early October, and they were talking about heroes of the environment, all the attention that's going to be focused in Copenhagen and elsewhere upon saving the planet. And what was interesting was Time had a caption, "We can all make a difference." Well, the very same reality exists for priesthood. In baptism, we can all make a difference. And what the advice that I would give anyone considering religious vocation is, first of all, to ask questions such as, what difference does Jesus make in the world? How does belief in him and association with the church actually change the reality of the world in which we live? And then how does it change the reality of who I am, of who we are as people? And I encourage people, pray, certainly. Read. Have a deepened knowledge of the faith. Most people's formal understanding of their Catholic heritage is on an elementary school level, though they may have a university degree otherwise. They know little. Well, you can't defend faith, you can't live for faith when you have an ABC understanding of that faith. So pray, read, reflect, review the difference that a faith commitment is making in your life, and allow that to be renewed on a regular basis. Certainly in terms of the sacraments, but also in terms of retreat options and spiritual direction options, because the essence of discipleship is an actual fact, discipline.
You frequently visit Holland, where you speak to young seminarians about the priesthood. They're studying for their vocation in probably one of the most secular nations here in Europe. What do you say to them as they are preparing for a life in the public eye?
One of the great joys that I have in going to Holland is precisely as you've expressed it. This is a truly secular nation. And what I admire deeply about the efforts of the bishop in the area where my seminary is located, which is Haarlem and Amsterdam, is that the church has been able to take a look seriously at how it responded to the formation of clergy in the early years after the Vatican Council. For example, about 1967, all the seminaries of Holland closed, because the bishops at that time had the notion that maybe people should be formed for priesthood in normal university settings, with rubbing shoulders with those pursuing secular professions. They should live in parishes and acquire a formation, as it were, on site. Well, 30 years later, they realized this did not work, and the vocational level dropped to zero. Now they've decided, well, perhaps that approach wasn't correct. Now, there's the key. I think it is wonderfully courageous and sensitive and sensible that the bishops are able to say, we tried this approach, it didn't work, so let's pursue another. And so they've reopened seminaries, not exactly on the traditional model, but modified, with greater input from lay presence, with greater involvement with various kinds of other programs and courses in the seminary premises that may have been seen in recent years. And there's a wonderful atmosphere in which people can inquire and ask within themselves and discern within themselves in a supportive environment as to whether or not God is calling them in this direction.
But is there a special way that these young men can be prepared for the extreme conditions, perhaps, of secular life in a place like Holland?
What's interesting in Holland, I meet so many of the people there when I go on visits with students and faculty, and I think the culture itself, believe it or not, makes the task slightly easier. For example, Bishop Punt has inaugurated evangelization and mission stations for the training of lay missionaries within the secular culture of Holland. And the seminarians assist in those programs and become trained in that. But what makes it easier is the disillusionment that you see everywhere in the country. People are not happy with the economic situation, the social situation, and with themselves. And even unknowing to their own consciousness, perhaps, they're seeking as to why they have this void and emptiness inside themselves. So there is a very slow turning around in people's minds and hearts wanting to understand what is available out there and what has traditional form of religion and spirituality said that maybe we can recover and maybe uncover and discover in new ways. That is helping the notion that priesthood has greater relevancy than was previously thought to be the case.
Now, are there any special criteria for selecting or accepting young men to the priesthood? And when do you know that they're ready?
Oh, Tracy, these are very difficult questions. There's no formula to say this man is now ready to be a candidate or this man is truly ready to be ordained. We never know perfectly. We never know completely. We never know totally. We know partially. And with the assistance of the various formation teams, including lay men and lay women, to be able to determine, is this person credible? Do they seem rational? Do they seem consistent with the basic values of our church and to some measure of our culture and society? Can they go out and witness in a way that's persuasive? Or do they come across as eccentric or erratic, in which case we have to hesitate, and some cases say no, and other cases say not yet? Hopefully the process of formation, which includes pastoral activity and even a pastoral year, allows people to sense, how am I coming across to those whom I serve? What is their response to me? What's their impression? What's their intuitive sense as to who I am in their midst? And I think that today we take more and more seriously that kind of response from parishioners and from professionals, psychologists, sociologists, etc., to be able to say there's a problem here, look at it, in the case of so-and-so. Or we see these qualities in this candidate, but we also see where they need to be strengthened or modified in certain ways. It's much more forward and candid than, in my opinion, was the case in the past. And this is a positive development in formation.
The church has been in the throes of the sex abuse crisis.
Yes.
in recent years, and also is grappling with the issue of gay men in the priesthood. Mm-hmm. How is the church dealing with these issues, and what should young priests be considering today in how to respond to these concerns of the faithful?
One of the words, which is almost a buzzword in today's society, is transparency. Now, admittedly, sexuality is not a topic that everybody's comfortable either discussing or disclosing. And I think what's important is today emphasis in spiritual direction in seminaries and in various kinds of lectures and visiting experts coming to the seminary, etc. Various emphases there are upon matters of personal sexuality, how we express it, how we live it, how we understand it, how we accept it, and how we project it. And how we feel about being comfortable enough to discuss with lay people issues of sexuality, which are, of course, vital to their existence as well as to ours. So there's a great deal of attention being given. Now, to be honest with you, one of my concerns is that very often when people have sexual difficulties in their own life, for example, an issue of identity and sexual orientation, they're not open to specifying that or discussing it often. They will try to conceal it. And formation teams can only urge that these matters be opened up in the context of spiritual direction. And in some cases, assistance being given to allow people to sit with a psychologist, psychiatrist, etc., to explore what sexuality is as a reality within the life of this candidate. But if the candidate is not willing, or the candidate is hiding, the team cannot route it out as if we have some special device to say, aha, bisexual, homosexual, can't do it. So what's asked and what's urged is cooperation in a supportive way, not a condemnatory, judgmental way, but in a supportive way to help a candidate determine, can they live celibacy maturely, honestly, openly, and in a sense of joy and hope, as the Pope recommended at Ars.
The clerical abuse crisis has touched all of the priesthood, scarring many priests profoundly as they in some way assume the sins of those who fail to live Christ's ministry with honesty and integrity.
There are also, sad to say, situations which can never be sufficiently deplored, where the Church herself suffers as a consequence of infidelity on the part of some of her ministers. Then it is the world which finds grounds for scandal and rejection. What is most helpful to the Church in such cases is not only a frank and complete acknowledgement of the weaknesses of her ministers, but also a joyful and renewed realization of the greatness of God's gift, embodied in the splendid example of generous pastors, religious afire with love for God and for souls, and insightful, patient, spiritual guides.
Pope Benedict said he shared the great suffering of religious over the grave immorality of some clergy during his pastoral visit to the United States in the spring of 2008.
Many of you have spoken to me of the enormous pain that your communities...
Many of you have spoken to me of the enormous pain that your communities have suffered when clerics have betrayed their priestly obligations and duties by such gravely immoral behavior.
It certainly mustn't be easy to be a priest these days, but little did I realize how deeply some priests have internalized the shame brought upon them. Jesuit Father Matthew Gamber of Chicago spent some time with us here at Vatican Radio. I asked him to share with me his personal feelings about the crisis and what it means for other good priests. I wasn't really quite prepared for tears.
The first thing that always comes to my mind whenever this topic even comes up is, absolute anguish for those who have suffered at the hands of priests. And they're the first, foremost, and ultimately the only thing that matters here. And so anything and everything that can be done for them, I extend my sympathies, my sorrow, and I've attempted wherever I've been to try to be of assistance to them and to be a source of healing and strength and reconciliation. So to each and every person, man, woman, or child who has ever suffered at the hands of a priest, I join the Holy Father in expressing my heartfelt sorrow and anguish and a desire to make things right, even though it seems very, very difficult. So first and foremost are the victims. The Holy Father, I believe, tried to express that as well. And so we start with them, and really, as I said, we end with them, and everything should be for their benefit. And as the Holy Father said, in an attempt to maybe protect the church or to act in the right way, those who had to respond to these have actually harmed the situation and harmed the church and have not really helped victims. So I think we're doing a good examination of conscience right now of what has transpired, clarifying what has transpired, how the reaction has been so far, and then to say, how can we improve that? That's what I hear the Holy Father trying to do.
Mm-hmm. And what we're trying to do, it seems, is also look at the problem in a juridical way, not just within the church, but priests who have committed these crimes will have to face civil justice as well.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that I think is a legitimate concern is, had these early cases been brought to the civil authorities and been prosecuted, you know, law has a preventative effect. It has, it sets the tone. It sets the example. So if nothing is ever done, no one ever thinks anything ever happens in these regards. This is all handled outside the realm of the public venue of the courts and the police. Then it's as if it doesn't happen. Whereas if when you do make these cases, for all of us, we know, you know, obeying the law or disobeying the law, there's consequences. So I think we have to, you know, say that that could have been very helpful and can be very helpful for us now. And I think I think the Holy Father has said, you know, full and complete cooperation with all the civil authorities who have the right of, you know, protecting the dignity and the rights of their population. And so the church always wants to be on the side of the law. We're not lawbreakers. You know, we support civil society, and especially when it touches on our personal behavior as well. We have to be accountable.
At Holy Thursday's Mass for the Last Supper, Pope Benedict said, Jesus, in his prayer after washing the feet of the apostles, challenges us to a constant examination of conscience. At this hour, the Lord is asking us, are you living through faith in fellowship with me and thus in fellowship with God? Or, the Pope said, are you living for yourself and thus apart from faith? As we meditate on the Passion of the Lord, let us also feel Jesus' pain, the Pope said, at the way that we contradict his prayer, that we resist his love.
He obviously holds the priest to the highest possible standards because they truly are representing Jesus Christ. And that's been the consistent teaching of the church. There's no one more beautiful to represent, no one more powerful to represent, no one more loving, but no one more challenging as well. And so if you are not up for this, you know, as a young man considering the priesthood, you know, you do not feel called to this, you know, by no means assume these responsibilities. If you ever assume these responsibilities, do everything that you can to ensure that your witness is solid and strong and consistent in every venue of your life. So I think he's always calling us back to the foundational aspects of all of our vocation, married, single, lady, clergy, sisters, everyone, who are you? And therefore, how are you expected to respond in light of that? So back to the basics, I think. And if we get that right, I think a lot of these, we won't be seeing these again.
Speaking of the basics start in the seminary. And what do you think needs to be done that hasn't been done so far to to ensure that the people who have these tendencies do not even get into the seminary.
Right. There has been, you know, since I joined the seminary, you know, a few decades ago, there was very thorough psychological evaluations. There's a big trust in the psychological community, but it probably has to go beyond that as well. You know, people of great judgment and great insight into what makes for a good priest, and those can be lay people as well as priests and bishops, probably should have some say in what goes on. I think for a seminarian, one of the things as I think and pray about this, I have a lot of brothers and sisters and they have a lot of children, and I realize how much they love those their children so much, and they're so precious to them. Nothing is more important to them. And do priests have a sense of that? How precious these children are, and what parents do every minute of every day to protect them, to nurture them, to strengthen them, and to do anything to harm that, it just breaks my heart. And so I think helping seminarians, though they will not be fathers, to have that deep internal appreciation for what parenthood is, for what motherhood and what fatherhood really is, and that as a priest, you're there to assist in that and to help in that and to foster that. And you're privileged to be brought into that. You become very close to families. But to know the sacred nature of that bond and what any transgression of it might mean for a child or a parent, it will prevent you from doing anything, I think, to ever do anything to a child that would be harmful.
And I see you're very emotional about this. It obviously it means a lot to you. You want to protect those children, your brothers and sisters' children, and any, indeed, any child out there, so any innocent life, from what the Pope himself has called filth.
I think we are given a lot of graces, and the best place to receive them is in the sacraments and in a really serious prayer life. You cannot be having a regular prayer life, regular conversation and contact with Almighty loving God, and then turn around and do harmful, horrible, difficult things. I think really they're doing so much investigating of priests and that were in these situations. I would love to really talk to them about their prayer life, and I think you'd say you'd find it had dried up. They were not praying, and they had cut themselves off from a lot of graces that would help them to have avoided these situations. So just become, as one of a prayer warrior, just really live a life of intense prayer with God.
What good can we get out of this horrible, tragic story?
Mm-hmm. I really believe God is present to these people and to the church. He is suffering with us, compassion to suffer with, and that we're being called to even a deeper humility and a deeper service in every aspect of our life as the church and as priests, and to relinquish any and all kind of claims of power, privilege, and it will make us more Christ-like and ultimately more effective toward the world. So let's not lose this opportunity to become more truly who we're supposed to be.
And that brings our program to a close today. Thank you for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. Laudator Jesus Christus.